Good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 12th of November 2020, Thursday class. We will continue with our third lesson, the sharing of this sutta, the sutta on the infinite meaning, or the innumerable meaning. We are at page 17, after this we will continue. We have finished the chapter on virtue, so we will move on to the chapter on expounding the Dhamma. Just relax body and mind, and maintain some form of attention. And as usual, we will proceed with our half an hour of awareness-based meditation. We are off the light, and you can proceed with your meditation straight away. In the meantime, I will set up the alarm. So the understanding of awareness-based meditation is very important, like I taught you all earlier on. So always remember the four support. Relax, maintain awareness, then for as long as you can, 24 hours. Then finally, if you're already able to stabilize that mindfulness or the silent mind, the awareness nature within, you have to relax completely and allow the last support to set in, trust. Trust means trust your nature to do, no more interference from your thought process, no more directing it or verbalizing. Or even chattering or whatever. Just relax, maintain awareness, stabilize it, and trust your nature to do. The last part, normally you don't do until you are quite advanced in your cultivation, progress. So initially is the first three support, especially the first two. Relax into every mind state that arises. Then let things be, maintain awareness. Just maintain awareness. Whatever arises, let it be. Thought arise, let it be. Let everything slow down and return to its original state or original nature of stillness, silence. That's why you maintain awareness. You can observe all these things happening. Then you can stay with the silence, the tranquility, the stillness. That is your true mind. That is your meditative mind, the silent mind. We call it the meditative mind. That one can understand, can awaken, can observe and develop the understanding. That nature is also very beautiful because it's just stillness, silent, pure mind. And that one can insight into phenomena, awaken, can see things as they are, can develop clear understanding. So meditation is a silent, choiceless awareness of the reality or whatever that arises within the form of mind. So today is the third lesson, our third lesson of the sharing of this topic, the essence of the infinite meaning sutta, or the sutra of innumerable meaning. Guliang Yijing. So we are going through the teaching on the adapted verses of this sutta. So we are now at the chapter on expounding the Dhamma. There is the one Dhamma door called infinite meaning or innumerable meaning, which allows bodhisattvas to readily attain Bodhi. So this one is a formal introduction to this sutta. The special position that this sutta has is its ability to awaken bodhisattva easily and readily. So this one is the main intent. So for them to attain bodhi. That's why this sutta is very unique. It's called the infinite meaning or innumerable meaning, because when you understand sutta, you understand all sutta, all the teachings that is involved. It has always been the ultimate truth that all things are empty and still in nature and appearances. So this is a very profound understanding. You can penetrate this understanding means you have realized the ultimate truth. The ultimate truth of all things is nature within the conditioned world is empty. And in fact, it is still, because it is that oneness nature within that doesn't move. But all the other things that move in it, they are dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena. That's why we call it the phenomenal world within the noumenal. The noumenal is that nature. So all things are basically the phenomenal world, empty within that noumenal, which is stillness. So this statement is very good. All things are empty and still in nature and appearances. However, sentient beings, because of their delusion or deluded thinking, transmigrate to the sixth destiny. So here, the sixth destiny is the Liu Tao Lun Hui in Mahayana. Liu Tao means the sixth path. It also represents the 31 plane of existence. But they summarize the 31 plane into just six plane or the sixth destiny. The reason why they do it is because they classify all the Deva rhymes, the Brahma rhyme within the Rupa Loka, and the four formless rhyme within the Arupa Loka into only one rhyme. They call it the heavenly rhyme. That's why the heavenly rhyme contains the six Deva rhyme, 16 Brahma rhyme. So 6 plus 16 is 22, plus the 4 formless rhyme is 26. Then you got 5 more rhyme down there. The human rhyme is the first rhyme within the bottom 5 rhyme. Above the human rhyme, manusa, are the heavenly rhymes. Then below the human rhyme are the 4 willful states. You have the rhyme of the demons. They call it the demon rhymes, where all the demons take birth. Then you have the rhyme of the animal rhymes, where all of the amphibian, fishes, birds, animals, or other type of life forms, apart from humans and demons and devas, they take birth there. All the insects, creature or whatever, even birds. Then below that animal rhyme is what they call the hungry ghost rhyme or the peta rhymes, the rhyme of the hungry ghost, petas. Then the last rhyme is the very, very severe hell rhyme. So this 4 willful state plus the human rhyme, 5. 5 plus 26 is 31. That's how the 6 destiny is the same as the 31 planes of existence. it will go back to the Sutta. So it stated down there, however, sentient beings, because of their deluded thinking, transmigrate, or they take birth actually through the sixth destiny. So this word transmigration sometimes is, I think the Buddhist doesn't like to use this word in the sense that it involves like a permanent unchanging entity that transmigrate into another body, take another birth. In fact, the teachings of the Buddha on rebirth doesn't involve a transmigration. It's just a death consciousness that conditions rebirth consciousness. That's it. Because of ignorant avijja and the moment of death, it conditions rebirth consciousness according to the law of karma. But a lot of other religion, they believe in a permanent soul, something that transmigrate from one body into the next birth of the next body entity. But the Buddha say that is not what he realized. What he realized is something else. That's why he taught us this beautiful Dhamma. In fact, when you meditate, when you're silent, and when you can go through all the transformation and experiences and understanding, you will know what this thing is. Especially the law of dependent origination, Paticca-samuppada, the dwelling. Then you will understand what rebirth is. It's not what people think. Okay, I will continue. Unable to escape suffering. So this one is very straightforward. Living beings or sentient beings. He said because of their deluded thinking, is they have delusion, sakadity, self-delusion especially. They take birth and get themselves entangled with samsara. They continue to take birth within samsara, the wheel of birth and death, for eternity, unable to escape suffering. Hence the Buddha expounded the supreme teaching, sutra of innumerous meaning, so that no one would have any doubt. So that is the reason for this teaching. The loving kindness and compassion he exercises was clearly not false. Means when this sutta was expounded, when you can have the understanding of its beautiful content, you can know the great loving kindness and compassion that the Buddha had out of love and great compassion for living beings. Expounded this teaching. He exercises clearly not false. Right? How come the word like that? The loving kindness and it's the capital letter is misleading. The loving kindness and compassion he exercises are clearly not false. All bodhisattva must learn and cultivate this sutta. That's why this sutta is for bodhisattva. You undergo the bodhisattva way, you have to really cultivate and develop the understanding of sutta. So this particular sutta is very important. Where it is the first book of the Threefold Lotus Sutta, Fa Hua San Pu Jing. So this first book, they call it the Wuliang Yi Jing, or the Sutta of Infinite Meaning or Innumerable Meaning. There is a chapter on virtue that explains clearly to us the great virtue of Bodhisattva, true Bodhisattvas, great beings, leading to the perfection to become Sammasambuddha. Then it also, under chapter 2, teaches you how to expound the teaching or proclamation of the teachings. So you must have these qualities. Then the last chapter is how to use the cultivation to develop the 10 merits, which are very complete merits. So this contains the fundamental understanding that Bodhisattva need to do their work, to perfect themselves, to cultivate, to go this way. Then the other two books is a continuation. The second book is Lotus Sutta, Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing. This one is the sutta explained by Sakyamuni Buddha. There are a total of, if I'm not wrong, 28 chapters. And in this sutta, it explains a lot of very beautiful teachings. Most of them involving the prediction for their disciple later on will become Sammasambuddha too. And there is a lot of very wonderful Lotus Sutta teachings. Then finally, of course, is the special meditation sutta of Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, or Samantabhadra Meditation Sutta, Fu Xian Jing. So the uniqueness of this third book is the 10 unique universal Bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva or universal virtues vow, the very unique vow, tie in with his famous meditation sutta that can make it very unique and very powerful. That's the reason why it's included under this threefold lotus sutta. Fa Hua San Fu Jing. So we'll go on. All Bodhisattva must learn and cultivate this sutta. By hearing only this one teaching, we are able to uphold all teachings or all Dhamma. And this can bring great benefits to all sentient beings or living beings. This sutta is like a seed that can multiply into hundreds, hundreds into thousands, thousands into millions, millions into billions of seeds. They can arise from it. And each one in turn can multiply and produce billions and billions of seeds continuously on to infinity. That's the reason why they always tell you in this way, one Dhamma can give rise to infinite meaning, and infinite meaning, they arise from one Dhamma. So it's the same. From one comes infinity. Okay, we go on. If we can hear only one phrase or one verse, we can realize hundreds, thousands, millions, and billions. So this one is based on the same explanation. 同一个道理, based on the same principles. Bodhisattvas abide in two appearances. This is very true. That's why Bodhisattva, they vow to walk the Bodhisattva way. Because of their great vow, they have to continuously come That's why they have to abide in two appearances. They have to appear. For them to come, they need a form and mind, karmically conditioned vehicle and tool. That's why this form and mind, which we term sentient beings or living beings, or in our case on this planet Earth is human being. This one is our vehicle and tool for us to come this life. This is our karmically conditioned form and mind. The form is like a vehicle to take us around. The mind, the consciousness trapped inside is like a tool for us to use, to live life, to experience life, to fulfill our vow, to go through coming experiences, to truly develop the understanding and perfection and cultivation, and of course, all at the same time, to enable us to experience life, live life to the fullest and all this thing. So this form of mind, you know how to use it, is very beautiful. Yeah. But do not be deceived by it. Do not cling on to it. Do not grasp onto it. Do not hold on to it. Do not go and believe that this is you, this is real. That will lead to sakayadity, self-delusion. The delusion of a permanent unchanging self within. This one is dependent originating, karmically conditioned because of coming, because of the condition behind it arise. There is a karmic nature. There is this last thought, the death consciousness, that will condition rebirth consciousness. That's how it arises. So that rebirth consciousness depends on the death consciousness and also the karmic nature. So karma decides everything. So where is your next birth is decided by this karmic nature. The law of karma, they governs all of rebirth. Mm. And they also govern all of life and existence, the moral causation. Mm. That's why we have to develop the understanding of this teaching. Understanding with right view, the law of karma. When we understand this law, we understand life and we will know how to live life. This is the moral causation. Mm. Okay, we will continue. The loving kindness and compassion they evoke are clearly true. They can relieve suffering wherever sentient beings are. Having relieved their suffering, Bodhisattva then expound the Dhamma for them, enabling sentient beings to experience happiness. So this is the beauty of this great being. They really is a great blessing to all sentient beings, all living beings, because they have great loving kindness, great compassion, and they are there to help living beings develop the understanding of life, help relieve their suffering. And they vow to do this work until eternity, until finally they realize the perfection. They vow to take across all living beings or sentient beings. Then not only help you to relieve your suffering, having relieved their suffering, Bodhisattva then expound the Dhamma for them, enabling sentient beings to understand life, to live life, to experience happiness and joy free of all suffering. So that is the beauty of Bodhisattvas, this great things. This teaching is safeguarded by all Buddhas of the three period of time. That's why this teaching has been passed down, protected, safeguarded by all the Buddhas of the three period of time, is past, present, and future. Then they say no Mara can gain entrance, nor can any deviant views corrupt it. So this sutta is a very unique sutta. I think because of the power of all these great beings and Sammasambuddha, that's why it has this efficacy. Okay, we go on. And this one you must listen. This is the essence of our understanding of the teaching. Is the impermanent or the anatta nature, non-self nature, suffering nature, and emptiness nature, and the four states of existence of all phenomena are inconceivable. It's not easy to understand. This four state of existence, you all know, I think. You see, every of this state of existence, there are four stages. First is the birth, the stage of birth. That is the first stage. When you are born into this world, then you go through what they call the arising cycle or the growth cycle. That's why from a single cell you subdivide, then you become an embryo, then you become a fetus, then after that you develop and become a baby. Then you are born into this world. Then as you are born into this world, you start to grow up, your growth phase. That's why during this stage you have your growth hormone. Then you reach a stage where you no longer grow, you plateau. Then after that, they call it the decay phase. You start to get old, get sick, and die. So this decay phase is the third stage. After it decay, you will die. This is the four stage cycle, the four state of existence. All life form, all planet, it's also like that. In fact, all phenomena, they go through this four stage. But some are very fast. Some is appear like three stage. Birth and death, birth and death. But if you look into the middle one, that one has the growth and the aging, decay. Even our breath, arise, pass away, arise, pass away. It's like two phase, but there is a sustainable phase that has the two phase in between. So all these are very difficult to comprehend according to the sutta. The first is the universal characteristics of impermanent anicchaṃ, followed by dukkhaṃ, suffering, followed by anatta, non-self or empty nature. And also the four states of existence of all phenomena, they are truly inconceivable unless you have the wisdom, the penetrative mindfulness and awareness. You can never understand. You have to be at the moment of its arising, sustaining, and its passing away to see all this clearly, and the wisdom to silence your mind, to observe and to awaken, to insight into phenomena, to realize the universal characteristic. Otherwise, it's impossible. If you use your thought, there is no way you can awaken. You need to use your true mind, your true nature, your silent mind, your awareness nature within. That is the nature that is beyond thought, beyond mind, beyond creation. That is your true nature. With that, you can awaken, you can realize the truth, you can understand all things. Then with that wisdom and understanding connected to the form and mind become enlightened, no longer deluded. The form and mind will not suffer. But the form and mind is not you, it's just a vehicle and a tool, karmically conditioned for our nature to come to this existential world, to do our work, to carry out our cultivation, perfection, and developing the understanding, to go through life, to experience life, and fulfill our goals every day. That's why existence is so immense, so comprehensive, so inconceivable, unless you go through this training to become great beings. You can never comprehend and understand life and existence and the universal characteristic within nature. Every of these appearances, they have their unique universal characteristic, and they are so wonderful, so beautiful when you see them, when you awaken to them, and when you realize them. So hopefully with this, you can develop more understanding. Now I will share on that. The nature and appearances of the Dhamma are fundamentally empty and still. So this one come back to the same explanation. They are neither appearing nor disappearing, neither coming nor going. So this one is like the Heart Sutta, within true emptiness. That's why the nature and appearances of the Dhamma are fundamentally, fundamentally means when you have penetrated everything, you realize everything is not what you think. They are just empty nature of existence, no reality. Thing exists, thing arise and pass away, but ultimately nothing tangible, no reality. You cannot hold on to anything. Just like what we explained, within existence, the highest in life is the present moment. And that is the reality, the only reality. Because we have already developed the understanding through our meditative, investigative understanding. The Mahayana got a very good saying. He said, 过去心不可得, 未来心不可得, 现在心也不可得. The meaning is very deep. He said, the mind of the past is no longer a reality where it has already arisen and gone. And the mind of the future, which has yet to come, also is not a reality because it hasn't happened yet. So the only reality is the present moment, the here and the now. But even this present moment, which is the highest within samsara, within life, you have to transcend it, to go beyond birth and death, to go beyond the conditional, to realize the enlightenment, the unconditioned. That's why even the present moment also, not what you think, not so real. So if you are mindful and aware, you can realize that every moment, every instant, like what we always say, moment to moment, life passes by. That is the only reality. But how stable is the present moment, which is the only reality? Split second is state and gone. Split second is state and gone. So how real can it be? That's why it's impermanent. It is not what you think. So if the present moment is also so unstable, then what is life? Yet that is the only reality and the highest in life. And yet it's just that split second is gone. The moment you speak about it, oh, away, gone. Away, gone. That's the mystery of life. That is the inconceivable nature of life and existence. Without that nature, without the meditative mind, without the awakening, you can never understand all this. So when we see that, we will come to understand there is no reality. Everything is mind-made. Come and go, come and go. Only the mundane mind, which cling onto it, grasp onto it, hold onto it through memory, that created the false illusionary world. This false illusionary world is like so real to the sentient beings, to living beings. As if there is a story, as if there is so much tangible things. We can never deny, like I always share with you, the experience that we have been born into this world. We have lived our life for the last so many years. But is it real? We can only recall through memory. They are like the dead leaf of yesterday. No more. Every moment, split second is dead and gone. Split second is dead and gone. The universe evolved. Everything evolved. Only mighty nature rolling by continuously evolved. He no you, he no me. Anicang dukang anatta. Empty nature existence. Realize this, awaken to this clearly, so that you understand life deep, so that you will not be deluded. Yeah. And then, once the wisdom arises, once the understanding arises, then you will understand clearly the deep meaning of the unconditioned and the conditioned. Then you can live life to the understanding of both. The condition and the unconditioned, then life become beautiful, meaningful, wonderful. That's why you can live life to the fullest. So that is the unique mystery of life. The form of Namai may not be us, may not be what we think, but it is a beautiful vehicle and tool for us to come to this universe, existential world. It can serve us well. We can develop all of the beautiful life experiences, moment to moment, although impermanent, arise and pass away very fast. But there is such thing as life existence. You can be with the moment in full awareness, to experience all the pristine beauty and wonders of life arising and passing away moment to moment. Then you can live life from your true nature with specific phenomenal awareness and spacious awareness without a center. Then you can be heedful, you can be aware, you can be mindful. That mind is so beautiful, that nature is so beautiful. Then with the understanding, the form of mind need not suffer. That form of mind will not be deluded anymore. The phenomenal world of form and consciousness will have no power over it. It will not be deluded by any of these appearances that arise within the phenomenal world of consciousness and form. And this is wisdom, born of Dhamma understanding, that you will know how to really appreciate life, understand life, and live, truly live. Then life becomes meaningful, different. Life take a turn, and we become the most blessed and unique living being ever to be born. with this style of understanding, then life can be meaningful, joyful, wonderful. So all this is in the teaching, especially the Heart Sutta that says within ultimate or true emptiness, there is wonderful existence. 真空妙有. So this is something very beautiful. Okay, we will continue. So I finish the part on the nature and appearances of the Dhamma are fundamentally empty and still, neither appearing nor disappearing, nor coming and going. They penetrate the meaning of the great vehicle, which is profound and unsurpassed. This is very beautiful. This is the Mahayana teaching. The great vehicle means the Bodhisattva. They penetrate the meaning of the great vehicle, which is profound and unsurpassed. Where this one is the great vehicle, the ultimate teaching to become Sammasambuddha. Their great loving kindness, compassion, and faith are true. They are not illusionary. With these causes and conditions, they attain Bodhi, means they become fully enlightened. They bring peace and joy to humanity and benefit all sentient beings. So this chapter is really very beautiful. Okay, we go on. I think finish. Is it? You go to the next page. Oh, still have a? Oh, I thought it finished already. Okay. What's the time now? Oh, okay. 9:24, another 5 minutes. Then we have our toilet break. Sentient beings, habitual natures, and desire are varied. So he taught various Dhamma with the power of skillful means. So this is the Sammasambuddha's unique quality and ability. They can teach sentient beings according to their nature, their habitual nature and desire. And everyone is different, like I always say. That's why they are all varied. So he taught various Dhamma with the power of skillful means to suit the individual. He opened up the provisional teaching to reveal the true Dhamma in accord with sentient beings' capabilities. The mind, the Buddha, and sentient beings are no different in their nature. So this one can be observed clearly when the Buddha came out to share and teach. Even when my nature started, the sharing is the same. We have to look at the condition at that time of all those living being or sentient being that has the affinity. So here in the sutta, he said the Buddha always open up the provisional teaching to reveal the true teaching. So the meaning here is to appeal to sentient beings. You have to open up the provisional teaching, the general teaching, the introductory teaching to reveal the truth. Because if you go direct into the teaching, the true teaching is beyond the comprehension of most living beings. And they don't see the relevance or the uniqueness or the importance of it. So they will just ignore you. For most living beings or sentient beings, when they have problem, then only they seek help. So when they have problem, they seek help, what must you do? You straight away tell them, hey, go and study the true Buddha Dharma. I tell you, you frighten them all. Some of them may be from other religion. They are not Buddhist. By faith or tradition or whatever. So you can't Provisional teaching means you start by giving them some understanding of what they are going through, why they are caught in those situations, then how they can really develop the understanding to come out of it. Then when they are able to come out of it, then they will have faith in you. Then only you can have the condition to share more with them. And then if they have the condition, the affinity, and the relevant condition to receive such teaching, then only you manifest to teach them the true teaching. So the start is always the provisional teaching to reveal the true teaching or Dhamma in accord with sentient beings' capability, means the individual's capability. But basically, towards the end, they will come to understand the mind, the Buddha, and sentient beings are no different in their nature. Well, every living being, every sentient being, we have our nature within. We call it the oneness nature, the Buddha nature, or the original nature. There are various names. So within that nature, we are one, because there is the source, the oneness nature. But as sentient beings, we come, we got lost. Lost within the mundane world, mundane consciousness. From that true mind, we have fallen due to the first thought of ignorance. That condition, subsequent thought, until the endless, eternal birth and death, until what we are now. Yeah. So all this is the understanding behind that if you are to cultivate this mind, develop the clear understanding, the penetrative understanding, and perfect ourselves, we can become Buddhas. We can realize our true nature. Then we will end up knowing that we have two minds. The true mind, which is capable of the direct seeing, the awakening, the realization, is so beautiful. Whereas the other one is subject to karma, the mundane mind. That one roam for eternity in samsara. We are birth and death. So all this understanding can be developed when we really cultivate this teaching. The Dhamma is like water, which can wash away all defilements. Where the water come from? The well. A well, a pond, a stream, a river, a brook, a channel, or a great ocean. It can cleanse. But as we all know, when you wash your clothes, you know, you have to put in a lot of either hard work or some soap or detergent. Now put into a washing machine. You have to spin it. For the dirt or the dust, or for the whatever that is not clean to be removed. So when they call that defilement, this one they are referring to Dhamma water. The Dhamma is like water, means Dhamma water, means the water must have Dhamma in it for you to cure the sick, cure those who are caught in delusion, suffering. So Dhamma water is like you put in soap, detergent, and all things. You can clean off all the dirty thing, the dirty litten or whatever. So here, water means Dhamma water. So the Dhamma water can come from any source. The water is not so important, it's the Dhamma within the water. So Whether it's from a well, a pond, a stream, a river, or what is a brook? Is it a bigger stream?
Smaller
than a channel, or a great ocean. It can cleanse. So Dhamma water that washes away the defilement is also the same. But when it comes to cultivation, it's different. All this delusion, errors, wrong view, you have to develop the wisdom, the awakening, the straightening of view to root it out. You cannot wash it away. It does not just get washed away like that. Without the enlightenment, the awakening, leading to the ability to straighten the view of the form and mind, it's impossible to root out defilements. So here we need to add in a little bit of understanding. So Dhamma water that washes away defilement is the same, but here Dhamma water refers to the wisdom, because there is Dhamma there, the wisdom. Water is just an analogy. Though varying in appearances, the nature of water is the same. So this one is just like expression. So too is the nature of the Dhamma. Though the appearances of water differ, all water can still cleanse. Similarly, all Dhamma water can wash away affliction and habitual tendency. Actually, not wash away. The wisdom that you develop out of the Dhamma understanding can awaken you, can straighten your view, can root out the wrong view. That's why when you have the wisdom, you are no longer afflicted. Then when you have the wisdom, when you awaken, the habitual tendency can be rooted out. But when you start to understand, you will not go back to the old way, the heedless way of living life. The way you understand life, the way you go about life is all different. No longer the old way, which is the heedless way. Now you develop the understanding, you go the wisdom way. You act according to understanding, according to wisdom. You no longer act according to memory, which is the heedless way. So all this are beautiful understanding. So I read on. Thus the Buddha turned the Dhamma wheel of the Four Noble Truths and taught that all things have always been empty and still. So here is a summary for those who still have not penetrated the Dhamma, you may not understand. So when he talked about the Buddha teaching, he said the Buddha turned the Dhamma wheel of the Four Noble Truths. So this Four Noble Truths is actually the essence of the Buddha's teaching, the final summary, the essence. And it's also the secret of life. So when you understand the secret of life, you will understand life. You will understand the teaching. Then you will know how to live life. So turning the Dhamma wheel of the Four Noble Truths under the original teaching as exclaimed or proclaimed by Sammasambuddha Sakyamuni was the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. So he turned it three times to develop the three types of correspondent wisdom. Suttamaya Panya, leading to Chintamaya Panya, leading to Bhavanamaya Panya. So these are the three stages of wisdom developed to the turning of this Dhamma wheel, the Four Noble Truths. The first turning is the proclamation of Dhamma. He proclaimed this For number two, the essence of his teaching. After he proclaimed the four number two in its essence, if you can understand through hearing, you will develop the first type of wisdom called Suttamaya Panya. Sutta is the discourse of the Buddha. Panya is wisdom. Wisdom born of hearing the teaching. So this first wisdom is very powerful. So this four number two, as we have gone through, it explained to us the secret of life, all of life, both mundane and super mundane, like I have always explained to you all. First number two explained to us the reality of life and existence. There are eight conditions within existence. If you live long enough, each and every living being, so sentient being, you will have to confront this eight reality. And these eight reality are the realities of life and existence, common to all living beings. It's not only unique to some, no, apply to all. That's why it's a very profound teaching. All of the mundane experiences, mundane happening, is under this first noble truth reality. Although they summarize into just eight, but the final one, the last one, covers the rest that is not included in the first seven. But the first seven actually cover a lot already. The first four, of course, we have gone through birth, old age, sickness, and death. Then from birth, old age, sickness, and death, he move on to when you are separated from your loved ones, separated from your prized possession that you hold on to dearly, suffering will arise. So when you don't understand this reality, when you confront them without the understanding of his teaching and the wisdom behind, you will suffer. That's why they are called the first noble truth of suffering. The reality of life and existence, we have gone through, we know. Birth, old age, sickness, and death can be very traumatic when you don't understand, when the arc design happened. Then when there is separation too, living beings suffer, especially separation from your loved ones. It may happen in various ways. Death is one of the ways. Death can be due to many things. Disease, sickness, accident, calamity, even earthquake, tsunami, pandemic like COVID-19, and many other things. Even sometimes kidnap, fighting, war, riots, or whatever. Then the other type of separation is relationship failure, marriage breakdown, relationship breakdown, divorce, separation. Then when misunderstanding occurs, siblings, brother, sister, parents, and children, they argue, then they become enemy. They get very miserable and unhappy. Then they decide to break up their relationship. So these are all separation. And sometimes forced separation due to poverty, due to war, due to nature's disaster. Then when there is crisis, economic crisis, you can lose your wealth. You can lose everything that you own, whatever that you hold on to dear, to your delusion. When it happens, separation, you really can become afflicted. Without the Dhamma, you can be afflicted. Then the other one is, when you are with people whom you don't like, there is suffering. Now this one can apply to many cases, even to children in the school when they confront with the bullies, fierce discipline teacher and students and all those things. Then also when you are going to life, people who have step parents, mother-in-law, father-in-law, step son, step mother or whatever, then there is also this what they call career environment where you have bosses or superior or those that are above you who are not so kind, not so compassionate, not so understanding. They can really make life miserable for you. And these are the people whom you don't like. People who bully you, who abuse you. That's why we have child abuse. We have abuses and torment by employer, employer more. And sometimes there can be a lot of similar incident where you confront road bully. And sometimes people in authority, they can also make life difficult for you. If you talk too much, they summon you or they threaten you. So sometimes you have to face that karmic conditioning. Then you have to pay back your karma. So all these are happenings that can actually give rise to afflictions, suffering, misery. Then the seventh one is when things don't go your way, when your expectations in life are not met, when you cannot get what you want, you become unhappy, you become depressed, miserable, sad. So all these are suffering, affliction, misery. And sometimes the fear can be so severe, especially old age, sickness and disease, the traumatic disease. Nowadays there are a lot, like cancer, hypertension, even stroke, brain tumor, kidney failure, liver failure, lung failure, COVID-19, and many other things. So all this, when they hit, it can be very traumatic. So this is the reality of life existence. Then the Buddha say the final summary, in short, when we deludedly grasp and cling on to the five aggregates of form and mind, especially the mental aggregates and the physical aggregate, the physical form, and the mental aggregate of Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana, suffering will arise, the Buddha say. That's why, in short, we say, this Upadana Kandas, the grasping aggregate, born of self-delusion, Sakayaditi, is dukkha or suffering. So that one will cover everything, because mind is a forerunner of all things, mind is chief. Where mind arises, all things arise. So this is how it manifests. Yeah. So the first noble truth is already so comprehensive. It covers all aspects of life within the mundane existence, all of your life, whatever you do, your ambition or whatever, whether politics or whatever, religion or whatever, it's all covered under that. Your views, your opinion, your belief system, your fear, your insecurity, your scarce memory, all these are under the Sankara aggregate, mind states or mental states. So Sankara Anicchang, Sankara Dukkang. So when you grasp and cling onto Sankara, you suffer. Then when you grasp and cling onto the thing you perceive, you also suffer, Sanya. Your feeling, you also suffer. Your consciousness, whatever that you become conscious of. Your seeing consciousness, your hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness. When you grasp and cling, you suffer. You believe it's real. you think is you, then everything become like very real. In fact, it's empty, but you cannot see, you cannot understand. That's why the first noble truth of dukkha is very powerful. So this first turning is to proclaim this teaching. Then the Buddha went on, he said, after he has proclaimed this reality of life and existence, the first noble truth, he went into the second turning. He said, this noble truth of suffering, dukkha, the eight condition, is to be understood. You have to understand it. Otherwise, you suffer. And here, you reflect, you contemplate, you inquire to develop the more stable, deeper understanding after hearing the proclamation. So this is second turning wisdom. You can actually reflect, contemplate, and inquire and stabilize your understanding, then slowly assimilate them into your nature. That's how the Cittamaya Panya, the second turning wisdom, come about. Wisdom born of reflection, constant reflection, contemplation, and inquiry into the truth as proclaimed by the Buddha. Then the third turning is always meditative. The Buddha said, this noble truth of dukkha is to be realized. So, to be understood is only the second turning. The third turning is have been understood, means you have realized its true understanding. Has to be understood, means you know what dukkha is, you know the second noble truth, the cause of its arising. Then the third noble truth, you know how you can cease it and realize the unconditioned enlightenment. And lastly is, you know the path that leads to that cessation. Then you cultivate it. So all these are the three turning wisdom. So the first noble truth, the Buddha lay out the comprehensive understanding of life within the mundane existence. Then the second noble truth, he moved on to explain to you the cause behind all this suffering. He said, there is a noble truth that explains to you clearly the cause of arising of this suffering, affliction, misery. It arises because of self-delusion, sakkayadity, that condition you to grasp, cling, and hold. That condition the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. And this greed, hatred, and delusion is basically craving. Craving for the senses, sensual craving. Craving to be and craving not to be. So when you have craving, it's the cause of arising of suffering, misery. Then the second turning, this craving is to be severed or rooted out through wisdom. Then the third turning is, this craving, which is the cause of arising of suffering, has already been rooted out. That's why it's about enlightenment. So the third noble truth is also very beautiful. The Buddha said, there is a noble truth that explains clearly to us the possibility of enlightenment in the here and the now. Suffering need not be. Enlightenment, Nibbana, can be realized in the here and the now. So this is most beautiful. Yeah? So this is very assuring. Then after that, the Buddha said, this enlightenment, which is Nibbana, is to be realized. You have to realize it, otherwise you cannot free. So you have to reflect, contemplate, and inquire, why did the Buddha say this? How can I realize this enlightenment? Then the third turning, he said, this cessation of dukkha or enlightenment has already been realized, means you have awakened. That's why the third turning is always about awakening. Then the fourth noble truth, the Buddha didn't end by telling you that enlightenment in the here and now is possible, but he went further to teach living being. He said there is a fourth noble truth, the noble truth that explained to you clearly the path leading out to enlightenment. Means if you cultivate this noble eightfold path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. Means the enlightenment in the here and the now. So under the second turning, the Buddha said, this Noble Eightfold Path is to be cultivated. Understanding it as knowledge and theory is not enough. You need to put it into cultivation until you have the embodiment of this Noble Eightfold Path. That's why to be real enlightened being, you must cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path. That's the reason why this Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation, is the ultimate awakening, the wisdom way. So if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. Then when you cultivate it, you will have this Noble Eightfold Path in you, the embodiment of this Noble Eightfold Path factor. And then when you live life, you apply, you use it. That's why you act following Noble Eightfold Path. There will be no more suffering. That's how you act. Noble Eightfold Path is the wisdom way. It's the advice of the Buddha, where you avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. So, under the second turning, the Buddha said this Noble Eightfold Path is to be cultivated. You have to cultivate, not only understanding as theory. Then the third turning, of course, this Noble Eightfold Path has already been cultivated. That means you have perfected yourself. So that's how the four noble truths, when it's three turning, becomes so wonderful and so marvelous, and it can really transform living being. So you look at life, the four noble truths explain to us all of life, both the mundane and the supramundane. The first noble truth is the mundane aspect. The second noble truth also mundane aspect, because it's about reality of life and existence and the cause of suffering, which is craving. Then the third noble truth is the supramundane. The supramundane is the unconditioned enlightenment in the here and now. Suffering need not be. And that is the most beautiful. And then how to do it is the fourth noble truth. It's the cultivation, the spiritual cultivation, the journey. Yeah. That's why with that, you will understand life and you will know how to live life and you will not suffer anymore. That's the beauty of his teaching. Okay, we go back to the notes and we can maybe end after that. Thus the Buddha turned the Dhamma wheel of the Four Noble Truths with his three turning, it's not here. Then the final summary is this one, and thought that all things have always been empty and still. So this one is after you realize the whole thing, then you realize everything is empty, not what you think. The phenomenal world of consciousness, they are impermanent, suffering nature, non-self, empty nature, that's why no reality. Then things change constantly as thought after thought arise and cease. This one is to let you see your mundane mind. The words are the same, but sentient beings' understanding is different. The nature of the Dhamma does not differ, but sentient beings move through the four states of existence, I've explained. This sutta is the true, is true in words and principle, and is supremely honored. One gives rise to infinite, infinity, infinity arises from one. The Buddha Dhamma is taught widely to universally respond to sentient beings. This is the profound, unsurpassed great vehicle, the sutta of infinite meaning that Bodhisattva needs to cultivate. I think we finish it. Right? Okay, good. So the exactly almost 10, 9:59. Okay, we will stop here. Then we will have our second session. Okay, you can just come in, report your meditation, or do your sharing, or Dhamma in daily life, and also maybe ask whatever question.
Hello, Brother Teo.
Yes, can hear loud and clear.
Okay, Brother Teo. Caught off guard, have to think for a while.
This good training. Caught off guard. Everybody also caught off guard. But it's fine, don't worry. Yeah. In the office also, suddenly your boss will call you. Or your colleague will call you.
Yeah, correct, correct.
So you have to develop the ability to respond. So in life, it's always caught off guard. If everything you need to prepare, then maybe you may not be able to respond correctly all the time. But when you have the training, you can. Actually, you no need to prepare. When you have the understanding and the Dhamma, you no need to prepare anything. You can just share. So in our this case is, you want to report meditation, you can. If you want to ask a Dhamma question, you can. Then if you want to review what we have gone through, you can. Or report to us what you have experienced with regards to Dhamma in daily life, you also can. So there are a lot of topics we can speak on. And you don't have to prepare yourself to speak on. You just speak truthfully, sincerely, based on what you have understood. Then like Adeline said, maybe today his internet connection not so good. He promised to share next week. But for you, there are so many options. You want to report your meditation, which is easy. Yeah, you just report what actually happened over the past half an hour when you meditate.
Okay. Maybe I just report on some of the things that I experienced lately.
Very good. That should be fine,
Sometimes when I meditate or maybe not even when I'm meditating, maybe when sometimes, you know, in a quiet moment when I think about the teachings of the Buddha, right?
Yeah.
When I run over it in my mind,
yeah,
I can understand what has been taught by Brother Dio. But then I notice, even though I understand and I can appreciate it, right? Because when I'm thinking something, maybe something outside what I'm thinking can happen, and I have to react to it. And I find that even though I understand, but the next moment when something happened, I sometimes could not
deal with it. Cannot deal
yeah,
with
correct.
It.
Yeah, not to say, it's like I forgot about what I have learned, and I revert to my old way.
Do you know why?
You continue.
Afterwards, I will explain. This one is very normal, very typical, but I will explain. It's very important. You continue. Then what happened?
I revert to what, but this has happened a few times, and I always contemplate on it again. It's like one moment I am silent and I'm thinking about the teachings of the Buddha and I understand, but the next moment, immediately when something happened, it's like there's no continuation from the time I was silent and understanding the teachings of Buddha, and I revert to how I always react like the old way.
The old habitual way. Do you know why? Do you need me
I
to
I think standard explain? Answer can be like there's no mindfulness, but that one is
no,
like,
not no mindfulness. That's why a lot of cultivators don't have the understanding. Maybe I will explain and you remember. I have explained before, but a lot of cultivators, they cannot really understand what I share. You see, Dhamma is to be realized. Dhamma is to be developed through an understanding. There are three turnings to develop the wisdom. So unless you have your past cultivation very strong, the moment you listen, you awaken. You understand. And then the understanding is there straight away. You go in. then this one will remain with your nature. You don't have to remember after that. That is not a knowledge, it's not memory. Then, like yoniso manasikara, wise attention at the moment of sense experience, it will arise when you confront something. That's why you will know how to act. That thing will come out. But it's not from memory. It's not from knowledge. If you try to remember, try to memorize as a memory, which I think you are still doing, then it will not give rise to that type of spontaneous understanding, which is yoniso manasikara. That's why you try to contemplate, you say quiet moment, you try to reflect, but you didn't do it constant enough, deep enough, penetrative enough. So your second turning wisdom, you didn't really have the ability to do it because your silent mind is not stable. Your mindfulness is not stable. The daily mindfulness especially. So because of that, you try to use memory, knowledge to replace the understanding. So like you say, when you go through it, maybe you have done it a few times. So that so-called understanding, in inverted comma, I use the word because it's not within your nature yet, not stable yet. You have not reached the ability to penetrate that Dhamma yet. So what you have is Dhamma knowledge mainly. Of course, some form of understanding a little bit deeper than just pure knowledge. So it has not become yoniso manasikara, not stable enough. That's why it cannot surface. Then your habitual tendency, you also cannot root it out. That's why you revert to your old way. The fear, the anxiety, you cannot be calm, you cannot be peaceful, you cannot be hateful at the moment of sense experience. You cannot accept the reality of the moment. You need to go back to memory to check every time. What did Brother Teo say? What did the Buddha say? What did I contemplate? If you go like that, it means acting according to memory. You're not acting at all. That's why you cannot do it. So the way to do it is the daily religious routine, the daily mindfulness. You have to do it. You have to develop step 4 and step 5 of Abhijja Sutta. Step 4 is very important, leading to step 5. Step 4 is constantly reflect, contemplate, inquire. The second turning wisdom. Then constantly listen to Dhamma to understand deeper, deeper, to stabilize the understanding, then assimilate it into your nature. Until you don't have to remember anything. Means the understanding is so deep that at any one time you can just have the understanding to act new. You know. You no need to remember anything. That is the stability. So the second turning wisdom, that stability of it, Chintamaya Panya, give rise to the initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara. That one need to be contemplated, reflect. And for that to stabilize, you need the daily mindfulness. That's why without daily mindfulness, a lot of things cannot come by. Without the daily mindfulness, to a certain extent, the stability, you cannot contemplate. You cannot reflect. You don't have that what they call that silent mind, that nature to reflect and contemplate. Those musicians, they call it the what they call to develop the talent and all those things, they need to be in the quiet moment. They call it what they creative.
Your creative,
mind, yes. Your mind has to be quiet in a suitable environment or setting, very conducive, like when you listen to chanting, when you listen to Dhamma, then you reflect, you connect, or when you are alone in a retreat condition or in your own house, quiet, tranquil, still, then you reflect. That creative mind is actually the source of awakening of the second turning. So all these musicians, poets, they need this creative nature, the setting, to allow them to write this type of beautiful music or poem or create their own talent. So sometimes they go to places where they like the nature, very beautiful, flowing water, nice nature's chirping of the birds, nature's vibration, the nature's great energy and breeze and environment or whatever. So whatever that can inspire them, make them creative, that is the way or condition to reflect, contemplate, and develop the understanding. That's why sometimes you go for spiritual trip, you go for a retreat, or you go to a certain way place. It's because of all these possibilities. Then sometimes when you cultivate, even at home while in the office, when you are doing your daily mindfulness, your religious routine, it can just happen. Sometimes while you are answering nature's call, you can just reflect, contemplate. So a lot of this understanding can stabilize. Then when it stabilizes, it becomes unisop manasikara. Then it can just come out. Because when you reflect until it's so stable, understanding rupang anicang, you straight away understand what? Not the words, no. Not the meaning of rupang anicang, no. It's the penetrative understanding, no. Every form that you perceive, you know why it is anicang. Like the table, the moving car, the sound, the smell, the taste. All of these rupang, they are dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of, you know, because you know how they arise, the causes and conditions behind. You have contemplated, you have reflected. Well, for me as an engineer, I know how everything come to be. Highway, the building, everything. Even the water we drink, the whole purification process, I know from the source, how they actually get the water into the intake, then the pump it up to the reservoir. Then from the reservoir, it goes through the treatment plant. Then from the treatment plant, it will be stored up after they filter the water. So the whole process, we are, as an engineer, I understand. Then I reflect, I contemplate, then I stabilize. Then I realize everything is like that. Means all of form, rupang, is dependent, originating, condition arising. There are causes and conditions for everything to arise. The house, the highway, the water supply, the air we breathe, everything within nature. Even the table that come to my house, the altar, or the rupang. Then everything that manifests since birth until now, whatever within my sight, sound, and senses, I can understand their dependent origination nature. So all this is what you have to reflect until very stable, until you have clear understanding. That's why you have to listen to Dhamma, then rejoice. When that Dhamma come out, you rejoice. Then continuously reflect on them. But never try to remember. If you try to remember, it becomes knowledge. Remember that. The moment you reflect, understand already, finish. Finish. Don't try to remember anything. The next time when you confront similar situation, if it cannot arise, the understanding means not stable yet. But you will know how to act on. I realize no need to remember anything. If you try to remember, it work against you. So this is the very important understanding that cultivator need to go through. Otherwise, you try to remember, become knowledge, and then you try to use memory to remember and act according to memory. Believe that this is how you should act. Because Brother Theo say, see things as they are. But you know the words. You have not penetrated the understanding. Then if you go deeper, I finish out this, then I let my daughter share. If you know this word, like I always mention, the Buddha say, whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions. Means what? There is a reality. So I have to accept. I cannot question or analyze or reason. Now, why this guy like that? He's just the way he is. Asasana. Condition like that, things will be like that. That is the reality. So that understanding like that, they saw the ability to accept is wisdom. You must reach that stage of understanding that everything is just the way it is. Finish. But you have to reflect and contemplate until very stable. Otherwise, you cannot reach that stage. Where you are going to the initial training, which is a good effort on you already, where you try to reflect, contemplate. Then, like you say, your reflection and contemplation, at that time, you think you know. You think you have understood, but you cannot apply. That means it's not stable yet. It's starting to develop, but not stable. But you try to retain as memory. That's why it works against you. Okay, now you let my daughter explain to you. She has something to share.
Hey, Sister Manian.
Hi.
Just sharing times when I react and then I realize that it's not healthy or unwholesome, but I still did that. Usually that is because there is a belief system that I hold on to that I still believe in a sense that maybe I believe that I am more important than whatever I am dealing with.
Yeah.
That's why I still react negatively when that situation happens until I really can accept that nothing is, I am not more important. There is no such thing as something that's more important than anything else. So I don't know, it's hard to explain without an example. I don't know if you can share your actual scenario, then maybe you can.
Yeah, I can, I understand. I can. But I think there are many times, it's due to my own fussiness that I hold on to my principle that when somebody do something that is different, you know, like something to do with cleanliness, I kind of get upset with that person.
In that example, so, there is a very strong belief that clean is better than dirty. So,
yeah, correct.
Are you sure clean is always better than dirty? Are you sure? Is that a fact in life?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you hold so strongly to cleanliness? Being clean is better than dirty. There is something that has been grown and nourished from a long time that now it is programmed in you already, and you cannot accept anything that is not clean. And in life, right, not everybody gets to be clean all the time, and they are surviving. Why do you think?
Correct.
There are pros and cons to both sides of the coin all the time. And picking one over another makes you non-tolerant to the other, which is why you will react.
Yeah.
So maybe you have to dig deeper. Why can't you accept dirtiness to be a good thing? Why has it become something you cannot accept in life?
Yeah. Yes.
Until you overcome that, this hurdle will still be there because it is in your belief system, the duality.
Yeah.
You want one side, you don't want the other side. Then you will never overcome.
Right.
Until you can accept and see the benefit of both sides, then you can make peace with it whenever in life, no matter what the situation. That is.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I think good discussion. Yeah. Eh? So come back to the same advice I gave to Song. Eh? You remember? Guang Qing Lao Sang. You know Mandarin a bit, Mayan.
Yes.
对也接受，不对也接受。So your view is not important, understand? No? It's the ability to accept the reality of the moment, to be at peace. Remember, at peace in all things, all situations, anywhere, any place, any time, any person. That is the ultimate wisdom. To be able to be at peace is wisdom. Means you can accept everything just the way it is. Unless you see conditions, then different.
Mm.
Then you try your best to help. But if there is no conditioning, if they insist on all those things, then you just let it be. Then just tell them, I think it's okay. I think you could be right because based on your understanding, this is what you want. Because they cannot really come to terms with the reality. Their views, their opinion, their habitual tendency, the way they do things. All this, when you see yourself, you see others, like Po Cheng. When she has the mindfulness to see her own subtle defilements, her habitual tendency, how she get into trouble in the past, then she can see others. She can understand. But when you can see yourself, you can see others. Before you can see yourself, your finger is always pointing out. Your senses are all out, never inside. You never go in. So Dhamma is 回光返照, reverse the light and reflect within. Why are things this way, not otherwise? Then you realize duality has got no meaning. Duality is relative. Good according to who? Right according to who? So we need to straighten our views. We cannot insist on what we want because that is our individual belief system or our individual habitual tendency, our preference. But the world is the world. People are just the way they are. So you need to actually develop this understanding to come out with the wisdom to accept the reality of the moment and be at peace first. Then if you've got condition on it, you manifest. Otherwise, let it be. Otherwise, it won't end. It creates more friction or misunderstanding. Good. Sadhu.
Thank you.
You can continue, Manyan. Anything else?
This has been happening many times for a host of different things. So there are some that I can learn to accept already. And I realize when I accept, then those negativity doesn't affect me so much. And also it doesn't...
Yes, not so strong.
Right? The other person also not so unhappy.
When you start to tone down, there is no more condition for friction to continue. Understand?
Correct.
And that's how you learn. So
the other person also like tone down and you know
he will respond accordingly. He will also try to last time already. Very insistent and all those things. That's what the world is
correct.
So this is how you learn.
And I realized if I'm being kind, right, in other ways.
People will be kind to you.
Correct. Correct. It's like more tolerance. Since you're so nice,
They will tell you, hey, Manya, problem. You take. But you are the fussy type.
It's like if you're fussy, people will not also fussy with you. If you are kind, even though they don't agree with you, let you go off.
No problem. But this is
correct.
This is what life is all about. So end of the day, it's noble, it's faux pas. How you actually apply right view leading to right thought. Right speech is very important.
Yes.
Right action is very important. Right communication is very important.
Correct.
That's why it's not about right and wrong anymore. It's not about views and opinion anymore.
Yeah.
It's about how we develop the understanding to have good relationship,
yeah.
To communicate in a very appropriate manner,
yeah.
Gentle, pleasant, and caring type of speeches.
Yeah, correct. This is more important.
Then holding on to your views, then trying to be right, then arguing. Mm. That's why application of Noble Eightfold Path is not easy. You need a period of cultivation. I went through it. That's why I developed the understanding. That's why I can share and teach it because of that. Because I also realized I need to improve on a lot of communication, the way to act, the way to speak, the way to communicate with people, establish relationship. Then the way I organize meeting, I become different. So different situation, different. So I resolve problem. I set out problem, and I always bring them back to the common objective so that there is no more misunderstanding, argument, and all things.
Mm-hmm.
I always say, we are all from the same office. This is our organization objective. From there we move. Then we don't say, hey, your department, you are responsible. You're supposed to do that. No, I will never say that. I say, this is our company's problem. We need to resolve it. So who can help? Then it becomes different. Then people start to volunteer. Then it becomes different. But if you start to point finger, you will have problem. Then they won't operate with you. Good. That is how you should actually develop the understanding of Noble Eightfold Path. Especially right speech, right communication, the way we deal with people, our relationship. Very important. That's why important to have kindness, goodness, gentleness, pleasantness, then we must be like friendly, caring, sincere, honest, gentle in our approach. Don't simply use the wrong speech to scold people, to get angry with people, to react to what people do and say. All these are wrong actions, wrong speech. So now you start to understand Noble Eightfold Path. The first few path factors are very important. From right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right mindfulness. The four right effort and right living. The way you live your life. That one is a skill. The way you approach people. The way you communicate with people. The way you speak to people. You can give them faith, like you mentioned just now. If you are friendly to them, if you are nice to them, they will respond accordingly, reciprocate accordingly. Then they like you. That's why wherever I work, my career environment, my staff all like me. They like to talk to me. We are sometimes, when there's condition, I let them understand a lot of things. Then contractor also like me. I'm different. I'm not there to create trouble for people. I explain to them that this is how you should do things. Otherwise, you get into trouble. If you get into trouble, don't come and see me. So they appreciate, actually. Very good, Sadhu.
Very funny. It's like being nice is a powerful tool for yourself.
Yes.
It work wonders.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 So now you start to understand the Dhamma is really beautiful, especially Noble Eightfold Path. You have that as your cultivation, hold the embodiment, you become beautiful. You become wonderful and people like you. You will have a lot of friends. Your character will change. You will develop virtue. You will do away with all the wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action. And all the wrong thing you cannot do anymore. You are more mindful. You are more caring, more appreciated. You have love. You have understanding. You will avoid or negativity of whatever you do, action or speech, or even arising of thought, your thoughts will be very kind, very beautiful, very gentle, very wholesome, and very sincere. So all these are beautiful, noble eightfold path cultivation. That field is very wide, and you can expand on it and develop it beautifully. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
brother, I got one more issue.
Okay. No problem. Like, yes.
Now it's year end, right? So most of us are doing our performance evaluation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I also need to evaluate my colleagues. So there is this colleague, right? That I mean, over these past few months, she has not been performing very well.
Okay. Yeah.
You have to chase her for her work. You don't chase her, she don't give you. Like, I mean, because we all work from home, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't chase her, it's like she's on holiday lah. You don't hear anything from her.
Okay.
Yeah, but at the same time, I also know why, I mean, I think why she's acting like that lah. Because last time when we don't go to work, I mean, sorry, when we go to the office, she sent her kids to the nanny. So she have two small kids. So but now she stay at home, she have to look after the two small kids.
Oh, no wonder.
Then she also have recently some stones in her gallbladder. Sometimes that one can give her problem.
Worry.
And what else? Her husband also sometimes can work overseas. Outstation. Petronas, okay. You know, they work in at
Yeah.
So she have to be at home by herself dealing with all this. I have tolerated that. It's like she don't give me the work lah, you know. Even after a few weeks or so. Yeah. Now you come to evaluation, I have to evaluate her accordingly, right?
Yeah,
I cannot taking her situation, I mean, that is her personal life. I cannot be using that for me not to evaluate according to her work performance.
That is correct. Yes, that is true. So what is your approach?
I'm thinking of karma also because I know that she's having difficulty. But then if I give her low marks, right? You know, it's like, why also get bad karma in future when I cannot cope? Then my boss give me a bad
That's
evaluation.
Why the ultimate understanding is, you know, there is such thing as karma. You only need to act sincerely. Sincerely means you don't cite anybody in the sana. You do it with sincerity. Sincerity means you look at this person, your staff. So what you need to do is, at least you must let her know that this is what is happening. So she need to actually improve or back up a little bit despite her family problem or whatever. You say, I understand, but work is work. Do you understand? Because for me, I very simple. I mean, my approach is when I have a staff that don't deliver things or do things behind my back, I know they actually have other things. But I am not here to pity you, understand? I'm here to actually do my work because I work for a company and they pay me accordingly. And you are a staff, you have a job. Duty, you have your responsibility and all those things. So you need to play your part, your role. So my instruction to them is very simple. Okay. How you do it, I leave it to you. But when I need you, you better make sure you're around. Then if you deliver, I don't even want to know too much. I can be flexible, miss. You sometimes will go for leave unofficial. I can cover for you as long as you inform me sincerely and you don't do it too often. But when I need you, when you need to deliver, you have to deliver. If it's beyond you, you can't deliver, you have to tell me. Then I help you solve that part. But if it's not beyond you, means authority-wise, financial authority or whatever, then you have to deliver because this is your job. Understand? You cannot be telling me the same assignment after 5 days, someone never come back. Then you have to keep on chasing. That is not the right way to do. So what happened was there were a few real situations. I think I shared them before.
Yeah.
So this time because he worked at night.
What's about that one?
I was saying, he was so tired, he come to office, he sleep. Then even my TA, my technician, all scared of him. He very violent. You go and disturb him, or you go and say bad thing about him, or remark about him, he very unhappy, he come after you. And he scold them and all those things. So nobody want him, no, I realize. When in the meeting, I supposed to allocate. Hey, I say, this carpenter, why nobody want? Everybody dare not say anything. Because they have been there very long. Then I came to know about it from one of my TA. He said, Tio, that guy, that worker, nobody can really deal with him. Yeah, he is like that. Oh, then I said, okay, don't worry. I assign to you, I said. Then I will come over to your office. I want to see him next Monday, I said. Oh, that's how we arrange. Then really, I went over at 10:30 in the morning, I think. I asked my TA, I said, where is he? He said, sleeping. Sleeping, I said, okay, we go. Wow, he really sleep, I'm just snoring down there. Then my TA call him. Wow, he get angry, he want to scold my TA. Then my TA also respond, hey, Jutra the Katsini. The engineer said, wow, the moment he hear my name, he panic. Then he look at me, wow, straight away, he say, sorry, then he apologize. I say, don't worry, jangan bimbang, duduk. I say, I not tahu mengapa you tidur. Letih ke? Then he told me the story. Then I told him, I said, okay, don't worry. We can still resolve all this. But work is work, I tell him. This time I let you go. I said, I won't report you. I don't do anything. I said, but I want to give you a warning. Yeah, it's not fair if I don't give you a warning and straight away take disciplinary action, then write to HR and they discipline you or cut your pay or do something to you, not fair to you. My approach is, I will let you know first. So this is the first time I caught him. I said, I will let you off. But I want you to promise me from now onward, no more such nonsense. If you are tired, you need the extra income or whatever, I say I can understand. But can we have this understanding? I said, whatever work that TA gives to you, you finish it off first, then only you go and sleep. I say, I don't care. At least you deliver a little bit of work. Then later on, as you become more able to have a good rest, when you rest without fear, you have good sleep. You recuperate fast and you recover fast. But when you rest, sleep with the fear that you are caught during working hour, you don't have peaceful sleep. So I told him that. He said, oh, no problem. He was so happy. Then from that day onward, my TA told me, Dio, you are really good. He is now so different. The thing I delivered to him, I don't expect him to finish. Same day he finished. Then he have a good sleep. Then he told me, he feel very grateful towards me. He said, kita punya jiwa terlalu banyak baik. Tada marah ai, tada report ai, tada buat ini itu, bagi ai chance. Then sekarang ai faham, ini Jurutera memang banyak pekerja cakap dia bagus. That's why I receive this feedback. And people respect me is because I don't scold, I don't take action and do all this. Because I say, all these things It's up to you, your life, your job. If you don't deliver at least some, there is no way we can cover for you. That's why you have to let her know, face to face, talk to her in a very candid way. I was told by my son and my daughter, I don't know true or not, your modern day way of evaluation is, it's not a one-way traffic.
Yeah, correct.
You it's, have to tell her what you wrote inside there.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
So, eventually, she will also see what I wrote.
Yeah, so this is a good
but
approach.
Before I write, I have to discuss with her first.
Yeah, that's why you have to give her the opportunity to be heard. That one is very important. Then she will explain to you, like, say, my husband, my children, or she said, fair enough. I can understand. Even though I'm not married, for your case, you say, I can understand. I got my parents to look after. I got my brother. I got my own life situation too. But work is work. And I don't expect you to deliver 100% or what. But at least certain basic thing for me to clear your job evaluation, you call it what, assessment or what? Assessment.
Performance evaluation.
Performance evaluation, yes. And you have to tell her the performance depends on your real performance. I don't expect high standard. You say you meet basic, I will give you an average assessment. But you want promotion, you want a good recommendation, you have to prove yourself. So be sincere, that is most easy and most important. Then the approach really receive respect from your staff. You are not doing things behind her back. You are not like pointing finger and really wants to make life difficult for them. Because all these people, when they fear they lose their job, they commit suicide or no. There were cases where people commit suicide where they were psyched. So be thankful. Don't give people unnecessary pressure. Okay, Maya?
Okay.
Very late already. Anything else?
Never mind. Next time then.
Next time.
Next time, brother.
Thank you.
Sadhu.
This is Dhamma in daily life. This is more important. This one is more life related. And it can help.
Next them. Class, brother, I continue.
Sadhu. Go and write one.
Maybe I talk to her. Sadhu. Before this spoken, because we are not supposed to, like, at the end of the year only tell them. Then they will turn around.
Right.
Now you tell me, before never tell me.
That's why people can get angry. But if you already give them a chance, I can tell you, most of them appreciate. Oh, at least my boss, he know I didn't submit, I didn't deliver. He's somehow so nice to me and say, I will not report you on this time. Because it's not fair. I have to actually let you know first. But if you continue like that, I got no choice. When I make the evaluation assessment report, I have to put it in. Because you have warned her, you tell her you have to do your best. You try your best. Nobody will fault you. And then I can guarantee you, she will deliver. Because you've given her a chance.
Tomorrow talk to her.
Okay.
Tomorrow talk to her. See how. I give her below average lah.
No problem. You just tell her I will not report that thing. That's it. Then you say this time maybe I see how you continue your work. By when have you to submit that report?
I already submitted that. But then I'm still have to discuss with my supervisor. Like, it's not finalized.
Then you discuss.
But my supervisor also know of this.
But you must give the staff a chance to say their part. You must listen to what they have to say. That one is more important. Because you cannot just make a one-sided, one-way traffic type of decision.
Yeah.
Finish off a career. So that is not appropriate. You have to at least alert them, let them know about what is happening. Then let them come back to you why they are like that. Then listen, be a good listening. Then tell them how you approach the thing. First time, let them all. They will appreciate.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Pradya.